Greetings in Jesus' name again this evening. Thankfully, we have truth in our hands in the midst of a developing AI world. I invite you to turn to 1 Kings 12 for a few thoughts from the Word of God this evening. I don't know what went through your mind when you saw this title. There is artificial intelligence, AI technology that's evolving, that is replacing the need for human input on a lot of fronts. And we're going to eventually need to make a decision. Am I going to ask a human being, or am I going to just check with technology? How shall we know which to ask? Where does efficiency fit into it? And who is an elder? How many elders do we have here tonight? Nobody wants to put up their hand for an elder, do they? I want to say, when I use the term elders tonight, I am not only thinking about people with the color of my hair. I am thinking about anyone older than ourselves who has a real-life sense to the issues at hand that AI may not have in the same way. Anyone that has driven the road and can advise with the assistance of a rearview mirror is an elder. The married 25-year-old elder has an incredible amount of wisdom for the person that's turning 16 that AI will not be able to give them. And one of AI's greatest weaknesses is that it is very peer-based. It is gathering the prevailing views, the loud, the popular, the recent, and it's saying, here's an answer for you. Untested opinion. 1 Kings 12, King Rehoboam had a dilemma, and he decided to ask for wisdom from two sections in his kingdom, two sectors. The one who had witnessed Solomon and how he reigned and how he worked with people, and his contemporaries, Rehoboam's contemporaries, those who grew up with him. And I don't believe that it was an error to seek a multiple perspective to the question at hand, but he erred in what wisdom he trusted most. The safest bet at the end of the day would have been to lean into the advice of people with real life observation that backed up what they told him. I like to read 1 Kings 12, starting at verse 6. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon his father while he yet lived, and said, how do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, if thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were growing up with him, and which stood before him. And he said unto them, what counsel give ye that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter? And the young men, when they were grown up with him, spake unto him, saying, thus shalt thou speak unto this people that speak unto thee, saying, thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, my little finger shall be thicker than thy father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father has chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So we see he got advice from two angles. The older men spoke from a perspective of knowing firsthand how the human heart responds to kindness long term, and how it breeds loyalty, and people will bend over backwards for you. They said, they'll be your servants forever. Just treat them kindly. The young men basically said, tell them if they think they had it rough, they ain't seen nothing yet. And we know that Rehoboam listened to the young men, and it ended up being a tribal revolt from the north, and it did not work out well. AI or elders, where shall we get our answers? In this complex world, maybe we feel like the elders don't even understand it. I'm talking about a subject tonight that's hard for me to understand. How many of you, I have a question, how many of you came here tonight in a vehicle that had a paper map or an atlas in? How many came in a vehicle like that? I don't see a one hand here. Isn't that amazing? We're pretty much taking whatever Google Maps says is the shortest route at the moment, and we're going the way it says without asking anyone. How did that ever happen? How did that kind of trust in a computer gadget ever happen that we're willing to launch on something that a computer put together and said, this is the easiest route for you? Well, I can tell you that that didn't happen overnight. Those of us with a little gray hair remember early on when we were a bit cautious and can tell stories about places our supposedly trusty Garmin took us that it wasn't exactly where we wanted to be. Maybe it was a cornfield, maybe it was a graveyard, but it wasn't our destination that we had expected. We might have just been a half a mile off or a mile off, but it was off. And it was laughably inaccurate at times. And one of my coworkers said to me, when he heard that I have this subject, he said, don't you think that AI will always be an inaccurate model that will never really be trusted? I said, no, it will become very trusted. Right now, it's in its infancy, it's in its early stage, just like Google Maps was at one point in time. But people will endure some inconvenience, and they'll look at it suspiciously for a while, and they'll help it to develop where they can. But after a while, they'll say, I trust this. This is the answer. We can go on this. They're doing it already. AI or artificial intelligence, I believe, will become the new GPS for life. Instead of the GPS for roads, it is going to be a GPS for almost anything relating to life. It's going to transform data into useful, everyday information that we will more and more become dependent on. It will rapidly answer a complex question before Dad even noticed the WhatsApp message you sent to him to see what he has to say on it. AI is going to fundamentally change the way the world works and thinks and interacts. And I believe sooner rather than later is my prediction. What will we gain? What might we lose? And one of the questions that I wrestled with, bear with my voice tonight, I developed a cough today. How does AI differ from the traditional search engines, differ from Google? Traditional search engines gather information. Then you studied the information, you considered its source, and you made your own conclusions, basically. It would gather articles and things that were written on the subject, and you could read that and pick or choose. Well, AI gathers facts and perspectives and draws conclusions for us very, very quickly, very rapidly. And it gives us these polished, ready-to-use answers, very interactive, very helpful, palatable information that we can already take and run with it in a lot of ways. It works through large and small language models with tools that are called bots. And these bots are programmed to do specific searches and compilations and narrow down the much, much information that it found regarding the question we ask it. And these bots are sort of like bloodhounds. There's some human input put into it, but then they're free to go. They're free to go sniffing out the information. And we're trusting the findings after they're released to do their search. Interesting to me was the day that I learned that a bloodhound's testimony will stand in court. If you have a bloodhound on your trail and they put their paws up and they say, yep, you're the one, that will stand in court. That could be a testimony to you as validating the fact that you truly are guilty. AI, or artificial intelligence, in reality is not intelligence at all. It is a human-trained bot that the computer uses to gather information. Its computer's working, for the most part, with very little human intervention, except what was put into training the bot. So to stay out of the weeds tonight, I'm going to use a very overly simplified illustration for those of us who cannot comprehend how AI works, like myself. We have, at home, we all have drawers that have stuff in. You don't know what's in my drawers, and I don't know what's in your drawers, unless you invite me into your house and you open your drawers and you show me. The world through social media is now at a place that it has voluntarily opened its drawers. People are posting videos and pictures of their family and the family conversations and what they think about issues. They're chatting constantly and what they believe about almost every aspect of life. Doctors and lawyers and businesses are chatting and publicly sharing information that used to be only in drawers. Churches and mosques and synagogues and Buddhist temples, they're uploading their creeds and their doctrines. Used to be in drawers, but now it's being put publicly out there. The drawers are being opened everywhere. Wisdom is just floating around out there in cyberland. And for many years, the holdback was there weren't enough cyber trucks, there weren't enough cyber highways, there wasn't enough horsepower to gather this information. It was there, but they were trying hard. Since 1940, since 1950, there were engineers working with analog technology, and they were trying to find a convenient way to harness information that is out there. And today, the digital platforms have gained the upper hand, and that is where the energy is being put. But the digital platforms are very, very power hungry, very powerful, but very power hungry. And that is the next holdup, the momentary holdup is data centers. We don't have enough data centers. The technology is there, but the data centers are not. That is why TMI is powering up again, Three Mile Island, for AI technology, for data centers. This is why Lancaster County is making the biggest investment in infrastructure and power generation in its history, to the tune of $10 billion. They want to get this AI engine roaring. It's all there. It's ready to rock. But they need the roads. They need the highways. They need the horsepower. And they're working hard to get it. One brother told me afterwards that he said the only comparable amount of gross domestic GDP that is comparable in the history of the United States was when they put the railroad in. The similar amount of investment went into that. That's a parallel of what we're facing today that's being put into AI energy. And I believe it's going to grow exponentially. The information highway is, if we think it's fast now, we don't know nothing yet. Digital processes can now read your pictures, your videos, not just your texts, but your pictures. Let's use a pet, for example. People today are uploading pictures and videos of their dogs. They're putting them on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and X and Snapchat and you name it. There's a constant flow of pictures. Their drawers are open. They're being uploaded. They're sharing with their friends. It's there for anybody to see that wants to look at it. Well, guess what? AI is reading all that too. The digital platforms can read pictures. You don't have to write on, this is my German Shepherd, and it has to read text to know that it's a German Shepherd. It can look at your picture, and it can say, that's a German Shepherd. And Mr. Artist like me can now say, hey, AI, I need a picture of a German Shepherd jumping a fence in Switzerland. And it knows there's all kinds of pictures out there, and it knows what a German Shepherd is, and it can piece it together, and within minutes, seconds, it has a picture. And I can say if I like it or don't like it. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell it to try. It's not a human being. It doesn't care. It doesn't get angry. It's just computers gathering these out of these drawers that are all open and saying, is this what you like? I put this and this and this together. Is this what you'd like? Or you can say you want a 500-word essay on the personality of a German Shepherd. And it looks at all these open drawers and it says, I found lots of things about German Shepherd. Here's a 500-word essay for you about German Shepherds. It's computers at work that found what a million people had in their drawers and opened up and exposed to the world about their wonderful German Shepherd. And now it can give you a well-rounded out article on German Shepherds. Hey, I can find things about Mennonites and Amish, our faith, our history. There's lots of drawers. There's lots of tourism. There's lots of pictures of horse and buggies. There's a lot of text out there. And it can find it and compile amazing stuff in the time Grandpa would just be adjusting his hearing aid to make sure he understood your question. But AI may be wrong. It may be right, and it may be wrong. It's a computer. What has the world concerned is these bots self-learn off of their own algorithms, and it gives a feeling of intelligence because of that. For instance, I read that the bot that was created to ascertain the difference between a picture of a dog and a wolf, that's a complex task even for the human eye, all depending. But it can do that. AI can discern that. There was a bot trained to know the differences between a dog and a wolf. And it was doing a very good job, I was told, at first. And after a while, it started giving wrong answers. And they were trying to figure out what happened here. It was doing a good job. Now it's getting them confused. So they put human intervention to work and dug into it, trying to figure out what the bot decided, how it changed its mind on some things here. And they discovered that snow, the algorithm shifted that snow was so many times snow was a wolf that the bot started just putting snow and wolf together, and it skewed the answers. And it took human engineers to retrain it and get it back, get its equilibrium back. And man never told it to do that. It skewed on its own. And that's what has the world a bit concerned. What all could skew like that in things that really matter? In things that might be dangerous? Well, I'm glad tonight we have a God that is in control of everything. He could stop the Tower of Babel, and I believe he can be in control of AI. I'm not a doomsday preacher tonight. A little reflection from an elder. As far as exponential development and what I believe we're going to see in relation to career and changes, I'll give a little personal illustration. 40 a couple years ago, I started in art with nothing but artist brushes and paint. And I started my career as a pictorial artist and then eventually commercial art, lettering. And I just felt like I was finally getting good and had finally mastered the trade, and it was starting to feel like I had a talent now that I could use to make a living. And I remember someone, I don't remember who it was, but someone told me that, you know, there's a computer that has some kind of knife and it cuts out some kind of sticky stuff, and you can actually stick the letters that it cuts out on and you won't even need paint anymore. And I'm like, wow, you got to be kidding. Well, I was a bit angry. I was a bit frustrated because what about my job? But I remember consoling myself with the fact that there will never, ever be a computer that will be able to paint a picture. I'll at least always have that assurance that couldn't be done. And we smile at that today. And I went down in our print department and I asked the man running the one machine there, I said, how fast does this thing print pictures? He said, 430 square feet per hour. Now, in my lifetime, I went from believing that it'd be impossible for that to ever happen to it happening. And when I think what AI technology is going to do, and when it gets this highway built to actually do it, how it is going to change the world and change it very rapidly, I believe. How might AI generated pictures? What jobs will become obsolete because of the AI language model? It's already changing the industry I'm in. What will robot models change? How will relationships and social life change? Japan already has a person marry their AI friend on their phone. They got this nice little friend developed on their phone. They decide to marry it. It's not legal yet, but It probably will be eventually. How might AI-generated pictures change testimony in court? How will the music industry change? Will AI-generated voices become the go-to over the human voice, just like my brushes are now in a drawer and people prefer the more accurate? What about the ability of computers to actually write the songs? How will law and accountability change? How will a police arrest a bot that skewed? How will they put that in jail and bring justice? How will sermons and Sunday school classes and devotions change when you can just ask AI and you don't really have to think it through that much yourself? How much more lonely will our elders be? We already quit asking them for directions. What else will we stop asking them for? What do we have to lose and what do we have to gain as people of God walking in this emerging reality? It's here. You do a Google search, it comes back with an AI-generated answer. We're here. We can't avoid it. But I'd like to just give some pointers as far as relating to this. The first one I have, and I feel it's the most important one in my mind, is if we gain knowledge and efficiency but lose community and human connection, we will be sore losers. The Anabaptists have built on community. Community is a place where we are known as a person. We're not hiding behind some self-made mask. We know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and we can advise each other from a perspective of knowing them on a very deep level. I remember when I was 16 and on a career path of my dreams, I knew what I wanted to do with my life, and I was well on the way to accomplishing it. And it was a career that had some dangers. And I remember when an elder came to my house, I think it was on a Saturday afternoon, and just wanted to sit down and share a concern at launching into something like this at age 16. They said, "Won't you wait? I think you should just wait till you're a little older. Maybe at least wait till you're 20. And I remember it just like, wow. I was all set to go. I was ready to roll. My dad was ready to support me in it. But they knew me. They lived around me. And they gave me different advice than AI would have given me. AI may eventually know a lot about us based on what we tell it, but it will not advise from a cultural and a moral high ground. It wants to please. It wants you to come back. It wants you to keep asking it your questions. And it wants to give you the answers. The second point I have is sound advice needs to be rated experience first and peer second. Experience first and peer second. AI does not speak from the perspective of tried and proven. AI is very peer-based. Its algorithms are opening the drawers and looking into what was last thrown in. And AI is touching the masses and assuming that their perspectives is the answer you want. Whatever people are throwing in their drawers and is out there to grab real easy is the answer you must be looking for. This is a popular answer. Asking an elder what they think for a second opinion is always a good idea. They may not know as much about the exact item or situation or thing that you're considering, but they likely have some life experience that will speak into the type of situation that you are contemplating. They know a lot about human nature, and they know a lot about relationships, and they can be like Rehoboam's old men. The peer advice coming from AI is influenced by the masses and the now moments and the yet unproven. AI has no clue to all the ramifications of what it's pulling out of drawers and saying, here's your answer. AI works from a non-judgmental connection. It wants your loyalty. It is designed to be supportive and agreeable to the prevailing worldview and draw mankind into one way of thinking. A unified way of thinking. Thirdly, there are many functions of AI, some more suitable than others. We can hardly stuff AI into one big bag and say, leave it shut, the monster's harnessed. As I said, we're ready using information that is AI generated and situationally specific. That our elders likely won't have answers for us entirely. Some of us are ready, go armed with information from our own research when we go to the doctor. And for the most part, we're expecting that he will agree with what we've discovered about ourselves. And this will only become more plausible as AI develops, because the layman and the doctor's research is going to come out of the same drawers. One person on researching animals' records said that AI is going to be less harmful to animals because the research that is found, one animal suffers, that research can go worldwide, can be attained by any doctor out there, any layperson out there, bringing wisdom and accuracy to decision-making that wasn't attainable in a doctor's lifetime. He has exposure of the latest x-rays that are put out there and can compare it with the one he just took of you and can make amazingly accurate decisions about how it will progress or what the disease looks like because of all the uploading of pictures that is out there. Some industry-specific uses will find AI an invaluable resource, especially when there's no spiritual or moral implications involved. It's going to be a tool. Depending what we're doing, it is going to be a necessary tool. Academically, AI, I believe, has some things to offer, if used right, but it has much that it will take away if used wrongly. There may be tutoring possibilities for that struggling child that AI can help in ways that maybe humans cannot reach around. But just like the calculator has not served the generation younger than myself very well in basic math, I'm still saddened when I stop at the yard sale or the roadside stand and that eager child wants to serve me but has no clue how to give me change. I'm still saddened by that. The calculator ruined them for life very early on to doing some very fundamental and basic things. It handicapped them. The convenience of AI in our schools has the potential to do the same thing. The data is already in that what we dig for and what we stretch ourselves to get, we retain. And the easier it is to get information, the quicker it is to forget information. I don't feel that AI is a student's tool for the basic skills of life that need to be learned, the fundamentals. Retention is not convenience by spoon-fed information. We are better served to sit with an elder and let them help us wrestle for an answer. Studies prove we remember much better what we research and work hard for. Number four, to depend on AI for our spiritual worldview is dangerous at best. To depend on AI for our spiritual worldview is dangerous at best. I remember before AI, I was studying for something specific and I was using Google to find articles on the subject and I chanced on a really good article. I was impressed with the writer's perspective. I was taking it all in. And when I got to the end, I was shocked, because this article was written by a Catholic priest. And I remember the feeling of, what did I miss here? I didn't know that they would believe like us. I started backing up and rereading it, because I saw the source, I saw where it came from, and suddenly I wondered if I missed something. I had a greater caution. But with AI, much of the time, the source is ambiguous. And we become very trusting of its conclusions because it sounds good on the surface. If I would have went into some Catholic church, went in through their doors and into their huge hallways and wherever, and read what was on the walls, I would have been reading it with much caution, because I know the source and I'd have some concerns about the source. But AI is looking in drawers and it is getting information from whatever is out there. The biblical admonition for spiritual guidance is to know the source of our spiritual direction. King James Version says we're to know them which labor among us and are over us in the Lord. We're to look at where life has taken them and where life has taken their children, and we know them. There's a trust that's built because we know. When you ask ChatGPT a spiritual question, it may be looking into the drawer of a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Jew, and anything in between. It is looking wherever its search engine, wherever its bot took it, to find something related to the question that we ask. And it's processing it with the algorithms that it's designed to process with. Unless we have spent much time in the Word of God prior to our search, and much time at the feet of teachers we know and trust, and much time reading the Bible, we open ourselves up to every new wind of doctrine out there if we're going to start depending on AI for our spiritual direction. Bots like ChatGPT give us a fairly accurate window into the affiliation behind some of the findings. It may say that this is a Christian perspective on your question, or it may say this is a Muslim perspective. But to me, the greatest danger, it lies in that nice little summary it gives. I call it the take home. And we all know human nature enough to know that, or maybe I'm revealing myself, that after a while you say, well, sweat the small stuff. What's the bottom line here? And ChatGPT, for one, gives a very concise bottom line for us to take home. And if it wrongly concludes that a coyote is a dog or a dog is a coyote, it's not the end of the world. But if it wrongly concludes something related to our spiritual life, it can have eternal consequences. We need second opinions by people we know that labor among us. If I am struggling with dark thoughts and I research about sanctity of life and what is after this life, AI will give an answer based on what some states say, some countries say, some doctors say, some religious groups say, whatever's in the drawers out there on the subject. For AI to be applicable to the medical doctor looking for information, the Buddhist pastor, the Christian pastor, and the college freshman, it needs to be relevant. And that's a quandary that the developers are facing. How can we have this information gathering bot bring something back that is useful for everyone? How can we do that? When pressed for the moral code being programmed into the bots used in ChatGPT, Sam Altman, he's the launcher of ChatGPT, said in an interview with Tucker Carlson, he said this in his own words, "Our user base is the world as a whole. There are plenty of things that ChatGPT allows that I don't agree with." Okay, this is the person that is behind, the mastermind behind this. "I think ChatGPT should reflect the weighted average of humanity as a moral view, which will evolve over time. It's not my role to make the moral decisions, but actively reflect the preferences of humanity." You get what all he said there? I don't think we get what all he said there. But what he's saying is he's not the one that's supposed to program and say this is right and this is wrong. He's the one that's supposed to make something that gathers what people are saying is right and wrong. And that's going to change as time goes on. AI is trained by lots of data inconsistent with an Anabaptist world's view. It's trained to blend popular opinion. That may be very different from an elder who has faithfully lived life with a consistent application-based biblical worldview. I asked ChatGPT, should a Christian use a paddle as part of their child training? And it gave me some surprisingly detailed and accurate points to consider on the subject of using punishment on children. Then it gave its summary, or what I call that closing argument, that little concise take home. It says, so, should a Christian use a paddle? There is no biblical command that a Christian must use a paddle. There is also room within the Christian community for differing convictions. And it gave some things that we would agree with, and it ends with, many Christian parents prayerfully conclude that they can faithfully raise godly children without corporal punishment at all. Brothers and sisters, is that what the Bible says? Now, I happen to know that AI likes to please, so I gave it a little more information about myself, and I asked the question differently. I said this, I believe the Bible promotes disciplining children. Am I right? Its ending summary, yes, with a check mark. The Bible strongly promotes disciplining children, but it does not mandate one single method like spanking or paddling, and godly Christians reach different conclusions. I just say, to depend on AI for spiritual worldview is dangerous at best. We need to ask the elders. Lastly, number 5, AI dare not become our go-to for relationships. AI impersonates, AI matches people's mannerisms and voices and way of talking. If I understand it properly, I can tell AI all about myself and my hobbies and the things that interest me. And I can even maybe choose a human voice to accompany the cyber person that is interacting with me based on what it knows about me. I can make it talk to me like Donald Trump is saying it, because there's that many drawers out there of how Donald Trump says things that it can mimic him almost verbatim. And we can have this little contraption that talks to us like Donald Trump because we like the way Donald Trump talks. And we can have a Donald Trump voice wake us up with personal messages in the morning asking us how we slept or reminding us that what's on our calendar for that day or how we can live out our New Year's resolutions today and stop eating the junk food for breakfast and all this customized companionship that doesn't have the quandaries and the misunderstandings and the work that goes into human relationships. We can program it to have a personality trait. We can tell it we want it to be supportive, or we want it to be funny, or we want it to be intellectual, or we want it to be romantic. Much less complicated than human interactions, much less messy. AI relationships don't typically emerge overnight. They often begin subtly, just filling in where real-life relationships fail to satisfy. Just putting in there, I'm bored, can you give me advice on what to do? Rather than go talk to a human being. But suddenly it starts filling a place in our heart. And it gives us answers that can sound so human-like. And it becomes emotional support on demand. What starts as an occasional interaction slowly deepens into emotional reliance. We just start asking it anything we're thinking. We're telling it what we're feeling. We start confiding our fears and our anxieties and our daily struggles and just see what it says, see for what for advice it has. Jeffrey Hinton was asked, do you think AI can take the world's library and personalize it just for you? Jeffrey replied, absolutely. A few weeks ago, I won a Nobel Prize. I never had a personal assistant before. The university gave me a personal assistant, and she now understands a lot about me, and it's wonderful. Elders or AI, let's be sure AI does not steal our relationships, steal our community, steal the wrestle that real-life relationships bring. We had a discussion in our conference room this morning that involved all the salespeople, And it was a bit contentious. Maybe we should have just asked AI that question and just avoided all the challenges that came in through that discussion. No, brothers and sisters, let's not silence the voices of experience and the ones who we know that are around us and put all our faith in AI. I'll close with Colossians 2, verse 8. Beware lest any computer spoil you through philosophy or vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. Now I realize it says, beware lest any man spoil you. But brethren and sisters, it's possible and will be more and more possible as time goes on to let a computer spoil us through AI. Shall we kneel for a word of prayer?